Chapter 8, Something Infinite and Altogether Fantastic. Although I try to share my near-death experience here, there are no words that can come close to describing its depth and the amount of knowledge that came flooding through. So the best way to express it is through the use of metaphors and analogies. Hopefully, they capture a part of the essence of what I'm trying to convey, at least in some small way. Imagine, if you will, a huge, dark warehouse. You live there with only one flashlight to see by. Everything you know about what's contained within this enormous space is what you've seen by the beam of one small flashlight. Whenever you want to look for something, you may or may not find it, but that doesn't mean the thing doesn't exist. It's there, but you just haven't shone your light on it. And even when you do, the object you see may be difficult to make out. You may get a fairly clear idea of it, but often you're left wondering. You can only see what your light is focused on, and only identify that which you already know. That is what physical life is like. We're only aware of what we focus our senses on at any given time, and we can only understand what is already familiar. Next, imagine that one day someone flicks on a switch. There, for the first time, in a sudden burst of brilliance and sound and color, you can see the entire warehouse, and it's nothing like anything you'd ever imagined. Lights are blinking, flashing, glowing, and shooting sparks of red, yellow, blue, and green. You see colors you don't recognize, ones you've never seen before. Music floods the room with fantastic, kaleidoscopic, surround sound melodies that you've never heard before. Neon signs pulse and boogie in rainbow strobes of cherry, lemon, vermilion, grape, lavender, and gold. Electric toys run on the tracks, up and down around shelves, stacked with indescribable colored boxes, packages, papers, pencils, paints, inks, cans of food, packages of multi-hued candies, bottles of effervescent sodas, chocolates of every possible variety, champagne and wines from every corner of the world. Skyrockets suddenly explode in starbursts, setting off sparkling flowers, cascades of cold fire, whistling embers, and animations of light. The vastness, complexity, depth, and breadth of everything going on around you is almost overwhelming. You can't see all the way to the end of the space, and you know there's more to it than what you can take in from this torrent that's tantalizing your senses and emotions. But you do get a strong feeling that you're actually part of something alive, infinite, and altogether fantastic, that you are a part of a large and unfolding tapestry that goes beyond sight and sound. You understand that what you used to think was your reality was, in fact, hardly a speck within the vast wonder that surrounds you. You can see how all the various parts are interrelated, how they all play off each other, how everything fits. You notice just how many different things there are in the warehouse that you'd never seen, never dreamed of existing in such splendor and glory of color, sound, and texture. But here they are, along with everything you already knew. And even the objects you were aware of have an entirely new context, so that they too seem completely new and strangely superreal. So even when the switch goes back off, nothing can take away your understanding and clarity, and the wonder and beauty, or the fabulous aliveness of the experience. Nothing can ever cancel your knowledge of all that exists in the warehouse. You're now far more aware of what's there, how to access it, and what's possible than you ever were with your little flashlight. And you're left with a sense of awe over everything you experienced in those blindingly lucid moments. Life has taken on a different meaning, and your new experiences moving forward are created from this awareness. I wondered at my newfound understanding in the other realm, enjoying and exploring that all-encompassing consciousness. As I did so, I became aware that I had a choice to make. I reached a point where I once again strongly sensed the comforting presence of my father surrounding me, almost as if he were embracing me. "Dad, it feels like I've come home. I'm so glad to be here. Life is so painful," I told him. "But you're always home, darling," he impressed upon me. "You always were, and you always will be. I want you to remember that." Even though I hadn't always been close to my father while I was growing up, all I could feel emanating from him now was glorious, unconditional love. During my physical life with him, I'd often been frustrated by his attempts to make me conform to Indian cultural norms, such as trying to get me married young and making me feel like a misfit because I didn't always comply. But in this realm, I became aware that without any physical restrictions or the ties of his cultural conditioning and expectations, all he had for me was pure love. The cultural pressures he'd put on me during life had all dropped away because they were all only part of physical existence. None of that mattered after death. Those values didn't carry through into the afterlife. The only thing that remained was our connection and the unconditional love we had for each other. So for the first time, I actually felt cherished and safe in my father's presence. It truly felt amazing, as though I'd finally come home. Our communication wasn't verbal, but a complete melding of mutual comprehension. It wasn't just that I understood my father, it was as though I became him. I was aware that he'd been with my entire family all through the years after he'd passed. He'd been with my mother, supporting her and watching over her, and he'd also been with me through my wedding and my illness. I became aware that the essence of my father was communicating with me more directly. "Sweetheart, I want you to know that it's not your time to come home yet, but it's still your choice whether you want to come with me or go back into your body." "But my body is so sick, drained, and ridden with cancer," was the immediate thought that came flooding through me. "Why would I want to go back to that body? It has caused nothing but suffering, not only for me, but for Mum and Danny too. I can't see any purpose in going back." Not to mention that the state of unconditional love was just so blissful. I couldn't bear the thought of returning. I wanted to stay where I was forever and ever. What subsequently happened is incredibly hard to describe. First, it felt as though whatever I directed my awareness towards appeared before me. Second, time was completely irrelevant. It wasn't even a factor to consider, as though it didn't exist. Prior to this point, doctors had conducted tests on the functioning of my organs, and their report had already been written. But in that realm, it seemed as though the outcome of those tests and the report depended on the decision I had yet to make, whether to live or continue onward into death. If I chose death, the test results would indicate organ failure. If I chose to come back into physical life, they'd show my organs beginning to function again. At that moment, I decided that I didn't want to return. I then became conscious of my physical body dying, and I saw the doctors speaking with my family, explaining that it was death due to organ failure. At the same time, my father communicated with me, "This is as far as you can go, sweetheart. If you go any further, you cannot turn back." I became aware of a boundary before me, although the demarcation wasn't physical. It was more like an invisible threshold marked by a variation in energy levels. I knew that if I crossed it, there was no turning back. All my ties with the physical would be permanently severed, and as I'd seen, my family would be told that my death was the result of organ failure caused by end-stage lymphoma. The unconditional love and acceptance was incredible, and I wanted to cross the threshold in order to continue to experience it for eternity. It was as though I was enveloped in the oneness, the pure essence of every living being and creature, without their aches, pains, dramas, and egos. I turned my awareness towards my distraught family's reaction to the news of my death. I saw Danny's head buried in my lifeless chest, holding my frail hand. His body was shaking with deep and inconsolable sobs. My mother stood over me, looking white as a sheet in disbelief, and my brother Anoop arrived to the shock that he didn't make it in time. Before I became sucked into what was going on with my physical existence and my family, however, I found myself being drawn away from my emotions. Once again, I was surrounded by the reassuring feeling of a greater story unfolding. I knew that even if I chose not to go back, everything was exactly as it should be in the grand tapestry of life. In the moment that I made the decision to go on towards death, I became aware of a new level of truth. I discovered that since I'd realized who I really was and understood the magnificence of my true self, if I chose to go back to life, my body would heal rapidly, not in months or weeks, but in days. I knew that the doctors wouldn't be able to find a trace of cancer if I chose to go back into my body. How can that be? I was astounded by this revelation and wanted to understand why. It was then that I understood that my body is only a reflection of my internal state. If my inner self were aware of its greatness and connection with the all that is, my body would soon reflect that and heal rapidly. Even though I always had a choice, I also discerned that there was something more. It feels as though I have a purpose of some sort yet to fulfill. But what is it? How do I go about finding it? I thought to myself. I perceived that I wouldn't have to go out and search for what I was supposed to do. It would unfold before me. It involved helping lots of people. Thousands, maybe tens of thousands, perhaps to share a message with them. But I wouldn't have to pursue anything or work at figuring out how I was going to achieve that. I simply had to allow it to unfold. To access the state of allowing, the only thing I had to do was be myself. I realized that all those years, all I ever had to do was be myself, without judgment or feeling that I was flawed. At the same time, I understood that at the core, our essence is made of pure love. We are pure love, every single one of us. How can we not be if we come from the whole and return to it? I knew that realizing this meant never being afraid of who we are. Therefore, being love and being our true self is one and the same thing. As I experienced my biggest revelation, it felt like a bolt of lightning. I understood that merely by being the love I truly am, I would heal both myself and others. I'd never understood this before, yet it seemed so obvious. If we're all one, all facets of the same whole, which is unconditional love, then of course, who we are is love. I knew that was really the only purpose of life, to be ourself, live our truth, and be the love that we are. As though to confirm my realization, I became aware of both my father and Sony communicating to me, "Now that you know the truth of who you really are, go back and live your life fearlessly."